fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay. You didn't start a business to spend your Sundays chasing invoices and manual data entry. But as you grow, accounts payable starts to feel like a full-time job you never applied for. Bills pile up, approvals get lost in email, and your vendors are constantly asking, "Where's my check?" It's distracting, it's stressful, and it's keeping you from the work that actually moves the needle. Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay is the exit ramp. QuickBooks Bill Pay automates the busy work that eats your calendar by bringing every bill, every vendor, and every payment into one organized dashboard. Stop chasing details and start seeing the big picture. Know exactly what's due, who needs to sign off, and how it impacts your cash flow before the money leaves your bank. Vendors can even manage their own details, so you stay in control of how and when you pay. Grow with confidence and put your AP on autopilot in QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com/BillPay. Again, that's QuickBooks.com/BillPay. Terms apply. Money movement services are provided by Intuit Payments, Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
Boogie Beatdown coming at you, Paul. Cody, UFC, Mexico City, Moreno versus Kavanaugh. A lot of Mexican fighters on this card. This is probably the first show that you'll hear this, but Mexico City, 10,000 feet altitude. I don't think I've ever heard that before. Nobody says that at the beginning of every single show, but just so you know where you heard it first, it was from Paul Shag and Cody Sapp. How are you doing, Cody?
Yeah, good, man. I mean, obviously last week was a bit of a disaster of sorts. Seems like most of the people in the community are feeling the same blues. And then now it's like, okay, let's have a good rebound week. But that rebound week is a tough Latin America card or a Dana White's Contender Series graduate card in Mexico City, 10,000 feet above sea level. So a lot of the fights that you'll notice is that they are good prospects. They're good prospects that have not been exposed. They've not shown you the depths of their game. And a lot of them have finished fights within the first two rounds. So we're expecting them to roll in these spots. But of course, you're going to get a lot of these, you know, just like we'll talk about it when we get there, but like a Jose Medina. The guy's just a Homer Simpson. He's got no X factor other than, you know, maybe he's got some durability. And that could be enough to win in a place like Utah or Denver or Mexico City on the basis of your opponent just completely death gasses, which is always going to be on the table. So a little bit trickier, a little bit harder of a card to feel great about, being that it's a lot of untested prospects. There is the altitude. There is the uncertainty, a lot of these matchups. And then some of these fights are just outrageous money lines. So what do you do with it? Do you chase some props? Do you chase some totals? Do you chase some parlays? Kind of a head scratcher of sorts, but 13 fights to talk with. So we'll get through it one at a time and figure out what makes sense and what's worth avoiding.
I would say, you know, on a week like this, when there is some unknowns and stuff, is like, don't go crazy. There are, like, there's one of these big favorites. I mean, and even last week, like, with Del Val, like, I thought, you know, I thought that there was a possibility that, remember that guy Stacks and something pod, the guy who set us up with the Rojkov interview?
Yes, yeah.
He was in my DMs, and he was talking about Levitt decision. And I was just like, yeah, I could see a world where that exists, where he like holds top position, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, but I'm not doing it because I hate that guy's twerking ass, you know? And then after the fact, I was just like, turns out that was the exact way that the fight played out. But I was like, hopefully you bet it. And he's like, no, I didn't bet it. And I'm like, you shouldn't ask me because I'm a moron. But Del Val seemed like the money line that, you know, a lot of people after the fact go, I can't believe this guy was minus 400. And it's just like, I get it. But like, where's your Jordan Levitt ticket? Probably doesn't exist. A lot of people were blindsided by that one. But MMA is crazy like that. It's just like there's so many factors and stalling. People have gotten pretty good at stalling, holding those positions, staying busy enough to not get stood up. Like Levitt fought the perfect game plan and it worked out for him. But yeah, I mean, when you have all of this big chalk on a card like this, and then you put them at altitude and all these other type of factors, like don't force things. You don't have to go, you know, completely all in on six of these big favorites to all come through for you, because odds would dictate that one of them is probably going to poop in the pie. And are you going to be able to figure out which one it is? Hopefully, but not necessarily. Anyway, main event, we got Brandon Moreno taking on Lonier Kavanaugh. Brandon Moreno is a minus 210 favorite to come back on Kavanaugh. Plus 180, a little bit of action coming in on Lonier Kavanaugh. And I'm a little bit surprised by that, to be perfectly honest. I know that like the team Entrum, or at least Brandon Moreno and Chavez, and I believe I saw like a picture with Imanol Rodriguez as well. Don't quote me on that one, but I know Chavez, Entrum guy, they've all been in Mexico City for 3 weeks. Lonier Kavanaugh's taking this fight on short notice. And, you know, Moreno obviously coming off of that loss against Tyra, got finished in the second round. That the stoppage, while Tyra was in a very, very dominant position, I was kind of screaming at my TV in the moment. And when I retaped it, I'm like, Brandon freaking Moreno, you kind of have to give him a little bit more time to try to survive there. Kavanaugh, on the other hand, it's just like, of course, very, very dangerous, very explosive in his approach early on in the fight, lands massive strikes, and is very, very devastating. But you know, against Charles Johnson, round two, end of round two, he's looking kind of tired in that spot. Against Ochoa, he's looking pretty tired in round three. Now we have him stepping up, taking a fight on short notice, filling in for Asyl Almabayev, and you put him at 10,000 feet. Like, I'm surprised that people are getting to Kavanaugh. Maybe they think that Kavanaugh's going to knock him out in the first two rounds, because this gets into the third, fourth, and fifth round. Like, I feel like Moreno takes over. Minus 210. I think it's fine to add Moreno to some parlays at this point in the week. But it could be, you know, it's always a bit of a cop-out to say it this way. But, like, maybe you get a better price on Moreno in live markets. I think Moreno's got the better wrestling. And he's got the better submission game. And I think he's got the better cardio. He's probably more prepared for the elements of fighting at 10,000 feet. So I'm a little bit puzzled by the Lonier Kavanaugh love coming in this week. What about you?
Yeah, so logically speaking, this is Brandon Moreno all day long. When you start to look at the footage, then I think that's why people are starting to jump on Lonier Kavanaugh a little bit. But yeah, I mean, listen, you got one guy, the Mexican he's a former champion. He's fought all the best guys in the division. He's fought at Mexico City before. Cardio's never been a problem for him. Brandon Moreno has all the attributes. If he just gets us to rounds 3, 4, and 5, he should take over. If he wrestles, he should be able to take Kavanaugh down. If he just uses his superior volume, he can outwork him. Again, on paper, it sounds too good to be true. And in many ways, it reminds me of last week's Jeff Neal versus Euros Medic fight. And there's not a whole lot of guys that are pre-fight betting Euros Medic. Well, they're not talking about it. They're talking about it afterwards. Oh, I can't believe it, you idiots. Took a 35-year-old drunk. Yeah, well, I only hear that after the fact. I didn't hear anybody saying that beforehand. Point being that
the under was the play there. That was
that was always going to be.
That was the it is the under. It was the chalky under
in Euros Medic genders.
Yeah.
No, you're right about that. The reason I'm liking it to it is that on paper, Jeff Neal's fought all the best guys in the division. On paper, Jeff Neal's far more experienced. On paper, Jeff Neal's just the overall better fighter than Euros Medic. But Euros Medic is young, and he's dangerous. And he's capable of coming out there knocking out a over-the-hill version of Jeff Neal. Now, when you look at Brandon Moreno, it's like, well, he's only 32. Well, one, that's a little bit old for flyweight. Two, this dude retired. He's like, I don't want to get punched in the face no more. I'm done.
When do you say that?
Well, this is a couple fights back, right? He took, not quite a year off, but I think it was after the Pantoja fight, loses, takes some time off, comes back, loses to Roy Val. Comes back, beats Amir Albazi. This is where it starts to get me, right? We'll start with the State of the Steve Ursig fight. He's completely changed his style altogether. In his last three fights, he's landed 1 of 7 takedown attempts. This guy used to wrestle all the time. He used to push a pace and try to take you down. And now he's not looking to wrestle. He used to be a volume guy. Now he's not really that much of a volume guy anymore. Steve Ursig outstruck him 116 to 89. And for the record, Steve Ursig's very next fight, he barely beat Ode Osborne, squeaked past Ode. And yet he looked pretty good against Brandon Moreno. That last fight with Tatsuya Taira, first round, Taira's beating Brandon Moreno standing. He's hitting him with the right hand. Brandon Moreno tries an inverted triangle and then just sits there for 3 minutes of the round. Second round, it's a weird one. Tyra lands a takedown. Brandon Moreno, the back of his head slams off the canvas. I think he's out. You'd have to watch it back, which I'm sure everybody has. He's staring up in the air. He back of his head hits. He stares. Tyra jumps over to full mount. He rolls. He eats a couple punches. Mark Smith's a terrible referee, sure, but Mark Smith's like, this guy's not responding, and waves it off. That's the first time Brandon Moreno's ever been stopped in a fight. He never been TKO before. He never been submitted before. And yet Tyra's beating him standing. Tyra is good on the ground. Don't get me wrong there. But you know, the slam kind of, he hits his head. Then he looks half out. Then he wakes up. Then he gets hit a few more times. Then they wave it off. I think everyone agrees it's an early stop because it's Brandon Moreno and you deserve to give the guy a chance to fight back. But he lucked out of it. That whole fight against Tyra didn't look good. Did not look good.
Round one, they literally just were like in, they were just basically entangled for the whole round.
Yeah, but he's got this crouch stance now. I mean, again, everyone knows what I'm talking about if you're going back and you're watching these fights back. But, like, he's changed his stance completely. He's leaning forward. You throw a front kick right up the middle, it's going to smash him in the face. I don't know. And he's just using this little jab. He'll throw four jabs in a row. He's looking to counter. He's completely changed his style. And so this version of him, I don't care for. He's not trying to wrestle. He's not trying to push a pace. He's not trying to use his superior volume. He seems to just be in this weird crouch stance waiting for you to go first. So I think it's easy to say, just like Jeff Neal, we're trying to believe he's in better shape. We're trying to believe the 3 months of no drinking has suddenly put him in, you know, career best physicality, and he wants it and he's hungry and he knows his back's up against the wall. You talk yourself into believing these narratives. They're just not true. In Moreno's case, it's like he has been on record saying, if I'm not fighting for the belt, if I'm not a contender, then I don't want to be there anymore. So a guy has already announced his retirement after losing the title. He comes back. He's had mixed results going 2-2. He's changed his style completely. I would say that Brandon Moreno is on the back nine of his career. But because he's in a main event and it's in Mexico and he's a former champion, very easy to buy into the whole, he's just that much better than Lonier Kavanaugh. Okay, well, if we're talking about striking, Lonier Kavanaugh is way faster than this guy and actually, in fact, does have more power. He's a better striker. If we're talking about wrestling, Brandon Moreno is a better wrestler than Lonier Kavanaugh, but he's not wrestling anymore. He's not pushing the pace anymore. So we keep coming back to this Lonier Kavanaugh gassed against Charles Johnson and got knocked out. That seems to be the big narrative. This dude gassed after two rounds.
Narrative and factual.
Yes, but it's the center point of everyone's argument. No one's saying Brandon Moreno is just so much better of a striker. They're not saying Brandon Moreno is way faster. They're not saying Brandon Moreno hits harder. Brandon Moreno's got, what, 3 knockout wins in the last 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time he submitted a guy? He's got one submission in the last, I don't know, whatever, 6 or 7 fights. He's not a big finisher. And so now you're not only does Lonier Kavanaugh have a chance to maybe just knock him out in the first round or two, if he's not pushing a pace on you, maybe you don't have to go and death gas yourself. When you watch back the Charles Johnson fight, the first round, he triples up Johnson in significant strikes. He's burning way too fast. He's in and out, dart in, out, big techniques, big explosive movements. Second round, he starts to slow. Charles Johnson pushes a hell of a pace. Charles Johnson's making this guy work, and he ends up tiring, no doubt about it. He's 26 years old. Could you not go to the drawing board and try to assess some of that stuff? Maybe work on your cardio. Maybe just work on pacing yourself. You know, losing is not bad for a guy. Charles Johnson also knocked out Josh Van. What did Josh Van do? He ended up going, yeah, softer matchups in a return fight than Brandon Moreno. But all the same, he ends up going and winning a UFC title out of it. So,
and then Charles Johnson goes out there and gets knocked out in the first round against Alex Perez.
And that's what I'm reading a lot of. I'm reading a lot of, oh my God, Lonier Kavanaugh just got knocked out by a guy who just got knocked out. Brandon Moreno bet.
Are you betting Kavanaugh? Is this what we're all getting to? Because I'm ready to put my shoey bet lead on the line here against you.
I know. What seems
that's the direction you're going.
Well, I'm just saying, Brandon Moreno seems too obvious of a pick. He's sitting at minus 250. You're asking, why is there buyback on Lear Kavanaugh?
Minus 210 now.
Minus 210. Money's coming in. I understand why the money's coming in. You don't want to flyweight Brandon Moreno at the top of your ticket. I've made these mistakes before. Take it from me. Flyweight's already a volatile division. 32 is not old, but at flyweight, it kind of is. This guy seems to have 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and he's taking on a guy that's 6 years younger than him, who's faster than him, so better striker than him, hits harder than him. It presents some danger. You actually said it best yourself. Live bet this thing that Brandon Moreno, it probably will lose the first round. He may lose the first couple rounds. At the very least, they're going to be very competitive. Yeah. The path to victory for Kavanaugh is probably win in those first two rounds by knockout. So if that happens, you don't got to worry about it. But if this thing does get to a 3-4-5, yeah, that's where I do have trouble backing this guy. I'm not an idiot. He did look tired against Charles Johnson. And now he's coming back to a fight on short notice in Mexico City. You went from fighting Bruno Silva to Brandon Moreno. It is a big jump. I have a feeling that's similar to Jeff Neal. You know, if you're going to get caught, you're going to get caught early. When you watch the tape, Lonier Kavanaugh does. He looks like a legitimate prospect. And like we've seen guys like Peyton Talbot or maybe even a Josh Van, to use that as a reference again, these really good prospects will lose and then everyone just turns their back on. Oh, this guy wasn't good after all. Told you so. I think this guy is pretty good. I think losing would have been good for him. Now you're going to have that experience. What did you do wrong? What can you improve? And maybe show up and have a better... Meanwhile, Brandon Moreno's riding this. He's got a big name. Everybody knows Brandon Moreno. Everybody likes Brandon Moreno. So it seems like the easy pick. And normally I would just say put Brandon Moreno at the top because he's one of the better favorites on this card. And you have a hedge out option by the end of it. And you can still do that if you want. But I would say if you get there intact, take the hedge out option. Because I just got a sinking feeling that if Brandon Moreno loses his fight, takes his gloves off and puts them in the center of the cage, would you be surprised? I wouldn't. And if he was to do that, then the after the fact people will be like, you bet on a guy that was planning on retiring. I get it all the time, dude. I get it. So, you know, if you want to be a value boy, you want to be the contrarian, you want to go outside the box, then Kavanaugh. But I guess I go Brandon Moreno. Just don't be surprised if you see this guy near the bottom this week, because I don't have that trust for him. I don't love this money line. I just can't pick a Kavanaugh on short notice, 10,000 feet up in the air, in a 5-round fight. It just seems like weird matchmaking, no? Why would you even put this kid in there? Why wasn't Alex Perez called up? This guy just won. Why wasn't Tim Elliott called up? These guys want to fight. These guys are ranked well within the division.
Alex Perez fights like once a year because he's just so banged up. But when he does show up, he can kind of win on any given night.
He can. But he has trouble cutting the weight and it's short notice. And I don't doubt that he was just like, I can't. Elliott, I think, is dealing with an injury right now. There's a couple guys that made sense, but on short notice, maybe not. Kavanaugh was going to fight in a couple weeks. So it's not like he just rolled off the couch. But
who is he supposed to fight?
He was Bruno Silva. Yeah. So you go from fighting Silva to Brandon Moreno, which is a tough task. Moreno, meanwhile, goes from fighting Asu Almabayev, is only going to wrestle. This entire game is wrestling. Mm-hmm. So you're probably working on your defensive wrestling. Now you're taking on a guy that's going to throw big, fast technique, man. I mean, again, you go back to Kavanaugh's fight against Antoine Ho on the Contender Series. It's like he's got really good counters within the pocket. He's got a decisive speed advantage here, and I think he's got a good power advantage. Moreno has cast iron durability, and people will say, oh, it was an early stoppage. And even if he did get partially knocked out on the takedown, it wasn't a punch to the head, but he's had a lot of fights. This guy's 23-9-2. He's had nearly 35 professional fights to his name. I would say 32 years old is being generous. You know, the damage is starting to accumulate, and at some point he's going to go down. Dan Ige had never been knocked out before. What happened to him last week? The writing starts to get on the wall. You've taken on all the best guys. You've eaten all these big punches. Eventually you're going to start to slow. Somebody that they don't expect to catch you is going to catch you. And, you know, I could see it possibly being this way. So I will take Moreno, just whereas the narrative seems to be it's all Moreno and this is an easy fight and he's going to wear this guy down. And I can't believe the UFC would throw a bum like Kavanaugh in there. I think that there's some very real danger, and Moreno better mind his P's and Q's. Again, when you look specifically at those last two fights, if he brings out that style here, he's in big trouble, man. His best path is to just try to hold on, grind this thing down through those opening 10 minutes, mm-hmm. take over 3, 4, and 5. And that's why a live bet actually makes the most sense for me personally.
Yeah, you don't lose any money on Moreno if he gets his head knocked off in the first 10 minutes. That's the savvy play. I feel like we agree on that. Cody went out of his way to poke every possible hole in Brandon Moreno, humanly possible, but still
got to be ready this week.
But still picked him at the end of the day.
Yeah, because
I'm just in a position to give
people bad advice where I'm saying, oh man, this guy's old and he retired.
Nobody's a lock at the UFC level. Like
we just got to look at both sides.
If anybody thinks that way, it's just like they haven't been betting this stuff long enough. There is no such thing as a hashtag lock because DQs exist. Now we're at altitude. Crazy things happen in this sport all the time. You have, you know, 4-ounce gloves and people swinging, trying to knock each other's head off. And as I've said a million times, Cody, it's like you strip people down to their underwear and fight in a cage in front of thousands of people, 10,000 feet above sea level. Crazy shit's going to happen. All right. We got David Martinez taking on Marlon Chito Vera, -310 for Martinez. The comeback on Chito, +260. Chito, known as a pretty slow starter. This money line's a little bit jarring, to be perfectly honest. But like going back, watching the David Martinez fight versus Rob Font, this guy's super, super, super fast on the feet. This fight likely takes place over the course of 3 rounds. Chito's super, super durable. I'm picking Martinez. I'm not excited about laying -310 on him, though. I think this is a decent step up in competition, but a step up that after passing the Rob Font test, I think he's ready for. Where are you at with this fight?
It's another one that I'm scared off of because of the money line. And why I say that is when you look at David Martinez, yeah, dude, former Mexican kickboxing champion, kid smooth, fast, good technique. On the Contender Series, he looked pretty okay against Xavier Franklin. That debut against Simon Oliveira, not much to it, but the last fight against Rob Font. It's the problem with that last fight with Rob Font. The first round, he styles on Rob Font, doubles him up, 22-11. The second round, he takes the whole round off. I don't know what to tell you. He literally stares at Rob Font and refuses to engage him for the second round. What changed? So now it's 1-1 going into the third against Font. And he puts his big boy pants on and he wins the fight. He wins at a clear 29-28 across the board. But do I want to bet a -310 price tag on a guy who's just going to take a round off for no reason?
A fight that could be a split. Like, this fight has very high split potential.
It's got split right over it. So now it's like, oh, well, what's his biggest win? Rob Font. That is his biggest win, is Rob Font. Well, what about Marlon Vera? Well, Marlon Vera has also beaten Rob Font, for the record. But yeah, is that he's fighting all the best guys. And you know, similar to Brandon Moreno with Marlon Vera, it's like you can see he's changing his style. He was always a slow starter, and I don't think that's really going to change, but he used to be high volume, you know? And then the last number, it's like he seems to just be very complacent in there, watching his opponent lead the dance. It was frustrating, although I had Zahabi. It was frustrating in that last fight against Eamon Zahabi in that you knocked him down in the second round. You proved that you can hang with this guy. This is another fight that's 1-1 going into the third. In fact, one of the judges ended up giving him the fight. And yet, he just doesn't have that ability to go into second gear anymore. He doesn't have that ability to just swarm you and to throw up big strikes. He's not really trying to utilize his wrestling in any, not that he's much of a wrestler, but to just change up the game. And against a guy like David Martinez, who's a little bit young, a little bit green still, you want to show all your facets of your arsenal, right? You want to strike with him a little bit to give him that sense of confidence and then take this guy down, grind on him. It's at Mexico City. It's at altitude. I think that a guy like Marlon Vera, who's proven that he can fight 5 rounds, has proven that he's got a deep gas tank. It's like, you got to swarm this guy and make him work. If you can get him into a 1-1 going into the third round, maybe you can make something happen. But there's a complacency there for sure, and that he's just kind of allowing his opponents to dictate the pace. And if that's going to be the case, and Martinez is at home, and Martinez is younger and faster and a little bit sharper and will probably land the bigger shots. What would the judges be looking at? Probably who's landing more impactfully. And one guy happens to have the hometown rub possibly go his way. So, you know, like you said, this one's kind of got possible split decision written on it. Even if it's not a split decision, it's got possible 29-28 written on it.
Yeah, close.
And so why would I want to bet a -310 if I'm expecting a fight that likely goes to decision and is going to be close and competitive?
Yeah.
Now, is Martinez going to knock out Cheetah? I don't think so, man. Cheetah's got one hell of a chin, but similar to when we're talking about a Brandon Moreno or a Dan Ige, these guys are getting later in their careers. They've taken a lot of damage. It's not crazy. Davidson Figueiredo knocked him down. It's not crazy that David Martinez will knock him out. It's just, it's hard to forecast that beforehand. So, you know, it's a fight that, yeah, I don't like the line, and I can make great arguments for Marlon Vera, but unfortunately, I guess I'm just too coward to take the outright dog shot. So I end up with a David Martinez. You know, if you're going to bet Marlon Vera, bet him after the first round because he is a really slow starter who's lost the first round in pretty well every fight he's ever had. So you'll get an even better number. But he's going to have to make this a blood and guts battle. Hope his opponent starts to slow down and take over the longer the fight goes. It's just, it's hard to have faith in him when he's 1-4 in his last five fights. And certainly, I wouldn't say seems disinterested. The interviews are all good. He's doing wind sprints now. We're not running long distance. We're doing wind sprints. And we realize we got to be faster. And we realize we got to be more explosive. And we realize all these things. And it's fair. But you're also, you know, 34 years old. Your body might not be like, yeah, dog, I know you want to do all this stuff, but injuries are starting to pile up, wear and tear is starting to pile up. And beyond that, when you used to just take a punch to give a punch, maybe that's not the style against these younger, harder hitters like a David Martinez. So it's changed his game. And again, you're looking at a guy that's got 35 pro fights under his belt. It seems to be the number where guys will start to slow down, and Ferris seems like another one. So I feel like I do have Martinez. Just, you know, you mentioned at the top of the show, can you take this top six biggest favorites and put them all together? No, because it's either going to be a David Martinez or it's going to be a Brandon Moreno. One of these big favorites shouldn't be this big of a chalk. And that way, just parlaying them all together, one of them will blow up in your face. Got it. Having a hard time figuring out who it's going to be this week. I got a couple ideas of who the likely suspects may be. And David Martinez is not above mailing one in here. What I saw in that second round with Rob Font is the biggest reason for me to just say pass on this thing altogether. But of course, for the purpose of the show and the PRP, I guess I will take DMAR to get the job done.
Yeah, we're making picks. We're not married to them. It's a tricky prop position. And like David Martinez's decision prop is like -200. So it's like, if I were going to take it, I would rather just take the money line in case he does knock him out, or maybe he's got a better grappling game than we're giving him credit for, or something like that. Cause like -310 down to -200, it's just like, I don't add altitude, everything like that. What do I think is the most likely outcome? I think, yeah, David Martinez by decision, but yeah, that prop is pretty ugly, to be perfectly honest. David Martinez by decision is -200. So you're shaving 100 points off of it, but you're taking on some risk in doing so.
For sure.
It's not exactly 100% of a lock. All right, moving on down. We got Daniel Zellhuber taking on King Green. Zellhuber, -500 favorite comeback on Green, +375. I mean, Bobby Green's a really, really irritating guy to put your money behind. You know, he clowns around when he gets hit in the face. He goes all, he like acknowledges it and then says it didn't hurt him, which just tells the judge's cage side that it hit him and that he probably felt it. So it's like he's drawing attention to these strikes, like, oh, that didn't hurt me, yada, yada, yada. But he does have a +375 price tag next to him. Bobby Green is 40 years old at this point in his career. It's never fun fighting him. Sometimes you're screaming at your TV when you're betting him. But like Zellhuber, let's face it. Watching the tape on him, the things that I think could cause Bobby Green problems would be obviously the length. Like Zellhuber does have some pretty solid length to him. And the head kicks that he throws, I can see Bobby, whose durability maybe passing him by at this point. I could see that causing Bobby some problems for sure. Now, it's not a -500 for a reason, I suppose. But over the course of Zellhuber's career, this guy has just been the only consistency with this kid has been that he's been inconsistent. The Trey Ogden fight was a massive head scratcher. We were all, you know, laying big chalk on him, and there wasn't. Trey Ogden outstruck him. Like, I mean, there was a little bit of grappling in the mix there, but like, he just didn't really let go on his strikes. He just seemed completely lost out there. Ribovich, it was an absolute war. Can Bobby take the damage that Ribovich did in that fight? I'm not entirely sure. But Michael Johnson kind of just pressed forward and kind of bullied him. So, +375. I haven't clicked it yet. I want to see when, you know, everyone starts rolling in parlay, stuff like that. Maybe we get an even better price on King Green. But it's a shot that is at least in consideration. And for the purposes of this show, when I'm like, you know, hashtag value boy type of thing, that'll be my pick. I haven't clicked it yet. Will I click it on Friday or Saturday? I know I'm a lot closer to clicking Green +375 than considering Zellhuber a safe -500 parlay piece. That's what I will say for the purposes of this show. Cody, your thoughts?
I couldn't figure out why it's sitting at minus 500 either, to be honest with you. So it's like, okay, well, what do the people think? And everyone thinks Bobby Green just can't take a punch anymore. Well, that's fair, but, you know, Daniel Zellhuber hasn't knocked anybody out in 5 years. So is this long-ass jab, he just sticks this jab in your face, is that going to get it done? Is that going to knock out Bobby Green? The head kick, you make a great point. Bobby's always got his head down, his hands low, and he's always kind of doing this. He likes to do the Philly shell, like, you know, mm-hmm. he'll bob and weave. Maybe if he kind of goes the wrong way, he's going to end up walking into a head kick with that kind of height discrepancy for sure. But you've mentioned the two best examples, the Trey Ogden fight and the Michael Johnson fight, where they're essentially dog-walking this guy. They both outwork him. He's really long, but he's only got a jab. I mean, yeah, and yes, the Ribovics fight, they both go to war for sure. But again, he's big and he's tall, and he doesn't like fighting in the pocket. He doesn't like fighting in the tight spaces where a guy like Bobby Green is generally coming forward. Now, Bobby Green's got a lot of faults for sure, but he doesn't sit on the back and just wait there and look to counter. He's trying to dog walk you and come forward, and I think that's inevitably going to make him have some success against a Daniel Zellhuber. Zellhuber doesn't really fight particularly well backing up, right? So if you can force him to constantly be stepping back, he's just shooting that jab out. If you can time the jab, step to the inside, maybe go to the body, maybe go up top, but just land those bigger shots. I think we want to love Zellhuber. I want to love Zellhuber. His coaches want to get behind him. Here's a kid that's on a 2-fight losing streak currently. He's coming off a loss to Michael Johnson, and just for Michael Johnson is 39 years old. Mm-hmm. Bobby Green is 39 years old. So the argument of, well, Bobby Green's old, it's like this guy just lost to an old guy. And the argument of, well, Bobby Green can't take a punch no more, Zellhuber's not knocking out anybody. And I heard a couple arguments of Zellhuber's just way better on the ground. Is Zellhuber going to take him to the ground? You think this is the path that he's going to go for, or is it not just going to get demoralizing having Bobby sit there, shake his head, move forward, land, shake his head? You hit the guy, he shakes his head, he shakes his head, he shakes his head. The judges might not like it, the fans might not like it, but if you're a guy that's fighting him, you know, sometimes it can be a little demoralizing where it's like, yeah, I'm just trying to keep this guy off of me, and he keeps coming forward and he's talking some smack and he's getting in my head a little bit. It just comes down to line, right? It's like, would you bet Daniel Zellhuber at minus 500? And for me, it's like an absolutely not. Okay, well, then just spam a King Bobby Green bet because he's big plus money. It's like, you know, damn near 40 years old Bobby Green doing the head shake the whole time. Is that something you want to get behind? Maybe not. But I did bet Bobby Green last time against Lance Gibson Jr., and he delivered fairly well there. They'll say it's a split decision because people don't like his style, but really, if he does exactly what he did there against Daniel Zellhuber, he'll have moments of success, and then you just got to rely on the judges getting it right. If it was even money, I'd be on Zellhuber all day long. If it was minus 175, I'd be on Daniel Zellhuber. Minus 500, I feel like I'm in the same boat as you, Paul. It's just like it's an auto fade. And for the record, yes, and for the record, I know I kind of passed on a couple decent other underdogs that had a chance, but if Brandon Moreno was minus 500, or David Martinez was minus 500, I may have taken that spam bet. Mm-hmm. Bobby Green, you're getting a crazy good price tag here. And I understand that the narrative is that people don't like him and he's old and he's chinny. It's like he's coming off a win in his last fight. The guys that have knocked him out, for the record, Mauricio Ruffy with a spinning heel kick. All right. Who else has knocked him out? Jalen Turner is a puncher. Drew Dober's a puncher. Islam Makhachev took him down and ground and pounded him into oblivion. Dustin Poirier is one of the greatest lightweights of all time. Daniel Zellhuber doesn't hit like those guys. If you don't knock out Bobby Green, you got a fight on your hand. If you have a fight on your hand, I'm not holding a minus 500 price tag, dog. I'm out on that. So, yeah, it's either a dog or pass here.
Yep. All right, we got Edgar Chavez taking on Felipe Buñez. Chavez minus 355 favorite to come back on Buñez plus 290. Who you got?
Yeah, this is one I can agree with the price tag. I like Edgar Chavez. And at minus 355, it's like, this is not any type of value play, but at some point, you're going to have to sink your teeth into some of these favorites, and Chavez, for me, looks like one of them. Listen, this guy is at NTRAM. He's been at Mexico City. He knows the altitude. He's training with Imanol Rodriguez and Brandon Moreno, and I think he's been there in advance. I think he's going to be okay in that regard. The other thing is how was a guy just going to randomly blow it for me? Well, in his case, he's very durable. So there's not just this, well, he might get caught in a submission or he might get knocked out. He's got that cast iron Mexican durability. All of his losses have aged fairly good. Tatsu Taira, he knocked down Taira, and then furthermore went the distance with him. Thwarted off all the submission attempts. Looked good. His other loss being Josh Van in a really competitive fight, actually. So the guy can take a punch and can defend submissions. He's all right. a 30 years old, still not over the hill, still not old. Just he doesn't fight really all that often. I think he only fought once last year against CJ Vergara. Looked pretty good in that fight. In 2024, he had fought just twice. 2023, fought, I think, just twice. 2022, maybe three fights there. I think he does everything right. When you watch the tape on him, it's like he can strike, he can grapple, he has durability, he does push a pace, he's fought in a good level of competition, and I do feel like this is a good spot for him, especially because it's at Mexico City. Felipe Buñez is a very opportunistic guy early. He's got a nasty submission game. But yeah, no, he's the 36-year-old flyweight who also doesn't compete all that often. And in his fights that get extended past that first round, that's where you start to see the guy just fall right apart. Yeah, it is partly fatigue because he's got explosive movements and he's going for a triangle choke. It'll be like a flying technique, or it'll be big explosive movement, and then he's reduced to a little bit less. When you watch his fight with Josh Van, first round, he won. Two takedowns, secured some position. Second round, he just absolutely falls apart. Once he falls apart, you'll realize this guy's got no depth to his game. He's not that durable. He's not much of a striker, and he just tires himself out. Josh Van ends up TKing him in the second. Nothing to it. The fight with Jose Johnson, it's a first-round armbar. This is where he thrives. But that last fight with Rafael Estevan was, again, much of the same. I didn't think Buñez looked that bad in the Estevan fight simply because Estevan wasn't doing anything. Just getting takedowns and setting up shop. That was it. Char's not going to do that. Char's will beat you up standing. Char's will take you to the ground. Char's will rough you up over there, and he'll just continue that pace. So all he's got to really do is avoid getting submitted or caught in that first round. Second and the third, especially at altitude, will most definitely be going in his favor. And the saving grace for us is this guy going to sub you in the first round? I don't know. You went three rounds with Charez. I understand that Jesus Aguilar caught him in a guillotine choke once upon a time, but if you know Jesus Aguilar, that's his move. He's got a really good guillotine choke. I think Charez is one of those guys that I can back this week and have a little bit of faith in. So hopefully I'm right there, but I'm going to be taking him to get the victory and be parlaying them up.
Edgar Charez and Aguilar, I believe, train with each other at Team Entrum these days. I saw some pictures when I was scouting a lot of Instagram this week, on top of doing tape, but like just trying to figure out if guys have been in town and stuff, or like have been, you know, acclimatizing. It's like if you go to Charez's Instagram page, is just like, not only has he been in Mexico City for the last 3 weeks, he was in some other place in Mexico for like 2 weeks before that, which was at like, it was at like 1,000, 1,500. And it's just like, you just see this guy running. Like he has put in the mentality of like, he's been running at altitude, working on that cardio, which is like, I think number one key to him. And like, if you can go to decision, it was an absolute war against Josh Van. But it's like, if you can just get deep into this fight, keep a high pace like you did against Josh Van, like you did against Tyra, who got takedowns, had him in some tough situations. You got a knockdown of Tyra in that fight. It's just like, if you can have a high-paced fight with Buñez at altitude and you've been training and running out there, it's just like, this is... As this fight wears on, I feel like Felipe Buñez, we've seen in some of his other fights at sea level, it's just like, he's a prime candidate, I think, to see him absolutely fall off a cliff. That's not to say he's not going to have some success in round one, but he's going to have to get him out of there, because I think Charez is just going to keep coming in rounds two and three. So we're on the same page there. Let's move on to Imanol Rodriguez taking on Kevin Borjas. Rodriguez -450 favorite to come back on Borjas +350. Your thoughts?
I mean, Imanol Rodriguez, again, we talk about ultra prospects all the time, and which ones do you want to believe, and which one do you really think these guys are going to go to the next level? You know, last week was Jacoby Smith, and we've talked about the Atiba Gotyes, and not all these guys are not always going to cruise. But if you believe they're a good prospect, it's like, yeah, they've got the talent. Imanol Rodriguez seems to have the talent in spades. He's fast. He's explosive. He's got power. He's got all these intangibles that'll probably make him a good fighter the longer time goes. It's, can he grapple at an elite level? And so getting onto the Ultimate Fighter, being a Team Daniel Cormier guy, going to a split decision versus Joseph Morales, which obviously aged quite well. And when you watch back that fight, it's only... It ends up going the three rounds. It's a split decision. It's like, it was highly, highly competitive. Joseph Morales had already fought in the UFC. Joseph Morales is almost, it was already 30 years old. He's been training at Team Alpha Male since he was he used to attend Joseph Benavidez's kids classes. Is how long Joseph Morales has been at that gym.
Yeah.
And you held this guy to a split decision. Well, who's got the higher upside? One guy ended up winning the whole show in Morales. Who's got the higher upside? Yeah, this kid who's raw and powerful and capable of good things. So Daniel Cormier kind of took him under his wing, said, listen, you work on your wrestling. You could be something special. And they have a lot of faith in him. I've got a lot of faith in him. Now he's gone to Mexico City in advance. He's training with, again, very good teams, getting in very high quality work. And I think all this will lead to just a very solid performance out of Imanol Rodriguez. Against Kevin Borjas, listen, I'm a proving guy in the sense that these proving guys, they live at altitude all the time. And they're fairly durable. So how would you, in theory, beat a guy like Imanol Rodriguez? Well, he relies on that big explosive power, and you got a hell of a chin. This is at altitude. If he pushes too much of a pace, he's a young kid. He's 23. A little bit inexperienced in his own ways. Would you bet this current line is Imanol Rodriguez as a minus... What was the line? Minus 450. Do you feel comfortable betting a minus 450 on a kid that has six pro fights?
I don't love it, but...
No, because if he's inexperienced, he's prone to be making a mistake. And now you're at altitude, 10,000 feet up in the air, versus a guy that can take a punch and also has decent cardio. You don't feel great about the line. But what does Kevin Borges do other than Homer Simpson him and hope he tires out? Nothing, because otherwise I think Imanol Rodriguez is going to eat him up. Part of getting a guy tired is having to push him, right? And that Borges, I just don't see it out of him. His fight with Josh Van, although not a terrible look for him, I thought he actually had some moments. He got doubled up on the significant strikes. His fight with Alessandro Costa, he got knocked down in the second round by Costa, who's not a huge power puncher. But beyond that,
leg kicks.
Yeah, that's right. He gets demobilized by the leg kicks. And Costa's not a big kicker, which is a bit of a concern. On top of that, it's that Costa, who's more of a grinding wrestler type, would double them up in the significant strikes again. You can kind of see him hesitant. Part of it's probably the leg. He keeps lifting up the leg and anticipating the kick, but he's not letting his hands go. And so if you can just take off one wheel off this guy and he's going to sit there as a stationary target, it's not going to be great. Beyond that, the Sumaderji fight's much the same. Sumaderji's super long for the weight class. Don't get me wrong. Southpaw, good left hand, maintains range, but dog, you're losing. Are you not going to try to step forward? Are you not going to try to change up your game? Or are you just complacent? Is being durable enough? Is having, you know, an ability to defensively try to stay sound enough? I don't know. But for Rodriguez, I feel like he's going to detonate one off the side of this guy's chin and either put him down or have the bigger moments, have the best of these exchanges. And the longer the fight goes, if it does go to the scorecards for whatever reason, the judges are going to be looking at the guy that's pressing forward, landing bigger shots, causing damage, instead of the guy that's mostly just surviving. So I do have Imanol Rodriguez to get the job done. But when you look at a mega prospect, and this kid's a mega prospect, do you put him all the way at the top? No, because he's still only six fights into his career. It is 10,000 feet up in the air. Borges is not the sexiest opponent on paper, but he's dangerous enough in his own ways that, yeah, Rodriguez is the pick. But yeah, I don't want to go broke on and then be after the fact like, oh, yeah, that's right. This kid's 23 years old with six pro fights under his belt. You shouldn't expect him to be an absolute lock of sorts. Although we think he wins, you know, it'll be another test, and this will be good for his development over the long run. But for me, it's going to be a Rodriguez play, yes.
Yeah, my concern with Imanol Rodriguez on like a money line play is like the Conceal fight on Contender Series. It's like, I don't know if they actually marked it as knockdown. He kind of got knocked down, but then like he just went like absolute balls to the wall. And it's just like, he just chased that finish and he got it. But it's just like, if that doesn't work, that's how you get super, super tired at altitude in this type of situation. I'm picking him to win the fight. I think he's the much, much better prospect. And Borjas, the one thing I will kind of bite back on is like the guys from Peru all have, I mean, these guys who are fighting out of Lima, Peru, it's just like Lima's at sea level. Like, it's not an altitude type of situation. That's not to say that they couldn't have put in a camp at altitude, but like so many of these guys, you know, they're not living at altitude. They're not fighting at altitude. Lima, Peru is a sea level type of thing. The country of Peru is like more elevated than pretty much any country on earth, except for the capital city, which is where a lot of these guys train. He trains with, you know, the likes of Barzola and who's the guy who just
Daniel Marcos? He's okay.
Daniel Marcos.
I honestly, I went back because, you know me, I'm a proving guy. So I'm like, who are the big provings? It's like Daniel Marcos is pretty good. But I went back and calculated Marcos, Claudio Puelas, James Lawntop.
This whole gym has been doing pretty poorly recently.
Two and 18 in the UFC in their last 20 fights.
Yeah, and that's not counting Jesus Pinedo, who just looked awful in the PFL recently, too.
Yeah, like, yeah, brutal.
Something's telling. Not all is right at Pitbull Martial Arts Center in Lima, Peru these days. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. We'll see if the FBI is investigating or not.
I don't think it has anything to do with that, but it could. Possible. I suppose it's
possible. If I'm a poor Peruvian guy, I'm thinking I'm telling my fighter, my buddy, you gotta take this one and lie down.
I have a little bit of money on Imanol by KO plus 130. That's how I got invested into this. I do worry that he could blow his wad, because if he does what he did on Contender Series, in theory, it's just like, if it doesn't work, it could be really, really ugly if we get out of round one. But he looks like an absolute force. So I'm just hoping this kid runs through him, and it's a nice little, you know, they're trying to set up some of these Mexican prospects to, you know, set them up for a year of more Mexican prospects and more Mexican cards. So Imanol Rodriguez, one of Daniel Cormier's boys. I know that Daniel has like maintained a relationship with him after the Ultimate Fighter. Yeah, I'm hopeful he runs through him. I took the KO prop. I don't know if I'm going to go crazy on the minus 450. That's just not really my game. Moving on down, we got Santiago Luna taking on Angel Pacheco. Minus 625 for Santiago Luna. The comeback on Angel Pacheco is plus 450. Another fight that's like kind of interesting. Angel Pacheco, I will say, probably the least memorable fighter on the UFC roster. When I first kind of saw this matchup, I'm like, who is this guy? I'm like, oh, he's already been in the UFC twice. Like, I just barely remembered these fights. Went back and watched those fights. I'm like, this guy gets hit a lot. Then I actually like looked at the stats, and it was just like, man, Angel Pacheco, 140 significant strikes eaten against Kalen Loughran, who's like not a high volume kind of guy
at all.
Danny Silva, like that fight was an absolute banger on Contender Series, but 204 significant strikes, Danny Silva knocked him down. And if you go back and watch Angel Pacheco's fight just before he got onto that, he fought Wilson Engroni in CFFC in 2022, and he got knocked down in round one. Round two, he comes back, gets like a rear naked choke finish. But it's just like, even though this guy hasn't been knocked out in the first round, or he hasn't been knocked out, I won't even say necessarily first round, but even though he hasn't been knocked out, he's been knocked down multiple times, right against the wall. I know he's, you know, Mexican chin, everything like that. I think Santiago Luna, who came out like a ball of fury against Quang Ly and absolutely put him out of his, you know, absolutely crushed him. They didn't really mark it as a knockdown. Quang Ly kind of like landed a jab and kind of stumbled him early in that fight. But once this guy just went absolutely loco, just the amount of violence and damage that he was throwing out there, I think Angel Pacheco takes his first KO loss in this fight. So Santiago Luna by KO is like plus 160, which I think is probably price propped up based on the fact that like Angel Pacheco hasn't been knocked out. But if you're that hittable, you're taking that many shots against Kalen Loughran and Danny Silva, and Danny Silva knocked you down, Wilson Engroni knocked you down, I think Santiago Luna is going to get a knockout on Saturday night. Your thoughts here?
Yeah, listen, it all lines up. I agree with you. When you look at it from the sense of the UFC found a guy that's 7-3, 34 years old, hasn't fought in the organization in 2 years, and they're parading him to Mexico City, it's pretty well set up. They have Santiago Luna's 21. He's a good-looking prospect. They're trying to build these guys up, and to build them up comes at the expense of someone bad. But who's bad these days? So you go and you find a 34-year-old who has not fought in 2 years and had a middling record on the regional scene anyways. Fought in the Contender Series, lost. They gave him a contract because it was a fun fight. Mm-hmm. And then he loses his debut against a guy who got cut a few fights later himself. So none of it bodes well. This one's all just narrative. Luna's 21 years old. He has less than 10 pro fights. He's able to just go YOLO mode and start throwing caution to the wind because he's young and he's inexperienced and he doesn't know any better. And he's been getting away with it. You look at a lot of these fights, he's knocking guys out in the first round. So as much as you're saying he may knock out Pacheco in the first or just knock him out in general, certainly possible. Just, you know, what if it gets out of the first round? What if this thing goes to a second or goes to the third? He has won, actually, is a decent little winning, is that Magomed Beyduyev in the third round. It didn't look like he was slowing down there. In fact, it was his Russian, his Chechenian counterpart was starting to slow down, and he was able to take over. At 21 years old, you're not expecting this guy to tire out, but that's a small little California regional. Now you're in Mexico City on a UFC card. There's going to be a live crowd. There's going to be expectations. You're a 7-1 favorite. You should be walking right through this guy. He's not fought in 2 years. He's a scrub. He's 34 and he's coming back. You're going to smoke this guy. That's the expectations. And when you're a young fighter, sometimes the nerves kind of get to you. Pacheco, as you mentioned, he's not technically ever been finished, but it's big volume, dude. Big, big volume. Against Danny Silva, he lost, but he landed 197. And against Lothren, again, he lost and he landed 88. So if he can lose the first round, but just keep that high pace up the second and the third round, this kid starts to make mistakes. Who knows? Maybe he's able to catch him. You did mention that he kind of got offset off balance against Quang Lee and then just decided to go berserk rage mode and take him out. If he gets offset off by Angel Pacheco, decides to go too hard and tires himself, or maybe that there's a vulnerability. We've not seen Luna hit all that much. And one thing with Angel Pacheco is that he is high volume. Like, he's only had the Contender Series fight and one UFC appearance, but based on those two fights, he's landing just under 10 significant strikes per minute.
Yeah.
So, you know, is he the easiest walk in the park opponent? On paper, yes, but styles do make fights. And Pacheco lasts the first round. This thing will probably start to get a little more interesting. So, because you can really not bet Luna pre-fight at minus 700, I would say, you know, maybe try to bet him after the first round, or maybe just try to watch this thing a little bit in fight. Or Paul's got a good theory here, just chase that KO prop. You kind of have to. KO money line ain't going to be good for you, and parlaying him could blow up in your face. So, find a better angle and go with that. And KO prop doesn't sound bad, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that, like, maybe it seems a little bit trappy, and it's probably because Pacheco hasn't been knocked out in his career. But, like, watching the tape is just like the
first time for everything.
Just because he hasn't been knocked out, but it's like there's signs of like this could be the moment at plus 160, plus 140s are pretty readily available in some other spots too. I think there's like plus 163 at like Bet Rivers and all those types of things. I expect that to kind of come crashing down a little bit. It gets you off of the minus 625 because, yeah, no, he's very inexperienced. He has the type of situation that like he could go YOLO mode, not get the finish, and then you're sitting there with a minus 625. Minus 625, you're supposed to be an absolute lock, and then people are like, I can't believe this guy was minus 625. At least I'm on like the KO prop. If he doesn't knock his head off, then so be it. I move on to the next fight, which is Jose Daniel Medina taking on Ryan Gandra. Oh boy, we're in another situation kind of like this, right? Medina, I believe, is the biggest underdog on the card. Yes. It's close. It's close. Francis Marshall. Francis Marshall's fight is right in line with this too. Gandra minus 725, Medina plus 525. Well, like the idea that this guy can't be finished, yada, yada, yada. I mean, that got thrown out the window. Of course, Thibaut Gauthier, you know, knee to the face, put him out of his misery in round one. Dusko is the bigger concern there, right? Is Dusko. The problem with Medina is, like, he's pillow-fisted, doesn't really throw anything with any sort of oomph. Not a good wrestler. I mean, he is about to make history, Cody, because I looked it up, and there have been, like, three fighters who have went 0-5 in the UFC. Can you name any of them off the top of your head?
John Alessio, Jesse Watson.
Sean Soriano, and then somebody called Naoyuki Kotani.
Sean Soriano never won a fight in the UFC. Is that an actual stat?
0-5. But see, the thing is with all these other guys, now I guess the one of the fights was contender series for Medina, but I'm counting them because Dana gave this guy a contract for that fight. Nobody, to my knowledge, maybe I'm wrong, nobody has ever went 0-5 in like the UFC and this in ever. And all those other guys, it was just like, it was like two stints. They went like 0-2 and then they came back and then went like 0-3.
John Alessio was in three stints. Jesse Ronson was two, and Jesse Ronson beat Nick Dalby, but it was a no contest. So his 0-5 is a little bit different.
All I'm saying is, I
didn't realize Sean Soriano never won a fight. That's crazy. That guy's the most talented guy.
That's what everyone said every single fight. And then he got subbed.
He's a
kickboxer. He's the kickboxing coach at Black Zillions. And then he's just like,
You want to know my Sean Soriano story? I met him in real life. And I was like, dude, you were the most talented guy, man. I used to bet you all the time. And he's like, oh, brother, dude, I'm so sorry about that. But he's a good dude. And he's one of the kickboxing coaches at Killcliff now. So.
I didn't mean to take shots at him, but Daniel Medina is in line to make some history here. Ryan Gandra is kind of like a round one finishing machine. What happens to this guy if he gets out of the round one? We were talking before we came online here, and you said that like Gandra showed up like 3 days ago in Mexico City. So it's not like he's really been preparing here. Dicey. I mean, I expect Gandra to probably get him out of there in round one. The price on that is probably pretty short, because Medina has been finished in the first round. It's plus 180. It's not horrible. If you wanted to go that route, it's probably how I'd go about it. I'm not really buying into the Medina's durability so much anymore because, one, I think Gandra could take him down, get to his back, find a submission, or two, I think he could probably knock him out as well. That being said, you at minus 725, we get out of round one. I'm not sure what Gandra's going to look like. I mean, I don't have any money on it. Purpose of this show, I think if I was forced to make a play on this, it would be the Gandra round one plus 180 prop. I don't know if I'm going to get to it, though. Where are you at?
Yeah, basically the same thing. Like, I'm not taking a shot at Bolivians who have never won a fight in the UFC, for the record, but the structure is just not there. The guy's tough. He's tough enough. You got to have some variables, too. You know, can I outlast this guy and then maybe knock him out? But as you mentioned, Medina's not a big finisher himself. He's, got no footwork. He's got no head movement. He's got no defensive abilities. It's just he's durable. Well, why do we think he's durable? Well, because he was on the Ultimate Fighter against Magomed Gadziazulov. Oh, well, Gadziazulov is god awful, abysmal. And he went the distance with him. He got beat up pretty bad, taken down six times by a striker, and now it struck 73-24. Got a contract. Weird. Zach Reese, dude, the guy went the distance with Zach Reese. Is that all that impressive?
No.
I don't know. And then Atiba and Dusko, one knocks him out, one chokes him out. I don't know that this legendary durability. Back in the day, you'd have to go way back, where there was a heavyweight called Wesley Cabbage Carrera. Cabbage, my guy! And they would always say Cabbage has legendary durability. Because look at the fight with Tim Sylvia. And yeah, no, he takes the biggest punches you've ever seen in your life and eventually goes down. And then you watch most of his losses and he eventually goes down. But the idea, he ate 10 huge punches before he went down. Well, that, you can take a punch, but you don't have this long-term advanced durability. You're not going to outlast your opponents. And so that's kind of Medina's thing. He's mostly just a punching bag. Why keep the guy around? Well, he's obviously not asking for any money. He's not asking for any type of pay raise. He's certainly not complaining. He's not going on his social media and saying, hey, I think fighters should collectively get together and ask for more. He's a company guy. And you can throw them up against prospects you're looking to build. He'll show up. He may give them a round or two. He gives them some work. And eventually the better man gets his hand raised. In Ryan Gandra's case, I don't know that I would consider him some big mega prospect himself. I'm not fully sold on him. He's already 30 years old, so this version is probably more closer to what you're going to have as a finished product. He fought very briefly for LFA, but was never a champion of sorts. But yeah, no, he's an offensive dynamo, especially early. That fight with the contender series with Trent Miller, it's a nice little first round knockout. But the fight with Vladimir Calvo on his last LFA appearance, Calvo, Cuban guy that, you know, certainly not a world beater, but tricky enough, certainly in the first round, that to knock him out is actually really not that bad. He had beaten a decent caliber of guys on the regional scene. And then low key, he really likes his head and arm choke. He'll get you to the ground. He'll soften you up with the ground and pound. He'll shift off to the side and look for the submission. We kind of see him as a big power puncher looking for that first round knockout, but low key, I think he could just take Medina down and sub him if he wants as well. And so that's why I am actually going to go Gondra. The ability to knock him out in the first round is there. If that doesn't materialize and you end up gassing, to take him down and ride up top position for the next round or two, and you'll still be able to get it done that way. You can really take this fight anywhere you want and then have a lot of success there. And so for me, I think he gets the job done. The UFC would like to build up middleweights, light heavyweights, heavyweights, the bigger guys. It's a bit of a thinner division. This Gondra kid's good look. Well, he's not a kid. He's 30 years old, but he's good enough looking. He's 8-1. I'm not saying he could be a star of sorts, but he's someone that they could most definitely work with, and he's got an exciting fight style. So this would be a coming out party for him, and it's at the expense of Jose Medina.
And then where does Medina go from here? God only knows. Back to Bolivia, pal.
Yeah. Well, where does a guy like that go from here? It's not like a PFL would want him, and not that anybody really wants to go to a PFL. One championship, they're going to give you one
Lux Fight League. Lux Fight League. Has Daniel Medina written all over it after this?
No, Karate Combat's got his name written all over it, because even though you might not get paid, I think it's a chance that he'd be willing to take.
It's probably that's probably makes more sense. All right, we got AFP taking on Macy Chason, -180 for Eileen Perez. Chason could be had for +155. I will say, I watched tape for every single fight on this card except for this one, because I was just like, you know what? I know what I'm going to be getting myself into in this type of fight. AFP is going to be shooting takedowns over and over and over. Doesn't have much on the feet. Chason's longer, but gas tank is definitely an issue, and I think she is there to get wrestled. I'm like, I don't hate myself nearly enough to watch the tape necessary to feel very confident on a play in this fight. I'm just being 100% honest with you guys here. AFP by boring, stalling, wrestling clinic, and then somehow she'll be like borderline top 10 fighter at that point. We're getting dangerously close to her being in title contention, Cody. Where do you think about this fight?
Yeah, so you and I actually did a futures champion show last year. Oh, and I was like, low-key, Eileen, no one wants to hear this, but low-key, Eileen Perez will end up getting a title fight at some point. She'll just fall into it. Because, yeah, the thin division, they're looking for fresh faces, fresh blood. She's got her little post-fight victory dance that I think everybody can applaud. That they will try to put her in the fights that'll get her to a title fight, and then, you know, sink or swim after that. But this is a good logical fight against Macy Chason. If it was at sea level, Macy Chason's 5'11". Macy Chason's a better striker. Macy Chason, if you don't take her down, you know, maybe she poses some problems. But at altitude, I think that changes everything. The problem with Chason is she's just too big for the weight class. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look back to, she missed weight against Raquel Pennington in 2021. She missed weight at 145. She came in at 148 and a half. She big. She big girl. And so her last fight against Yana Santos is at 135. She also missed weight. Came in at 137 and a half. You can see in that Yana Santos fight. You can see in the fight before that with Ketlin Vieira. The big weight cuts down to 135 seem to tax her the longer the fight goes. The first round, it's like, oh, she's wily. She's strong. The second and the third round, once she gets taken down, she accepts position. And this is a problem against Eileen Perez, because Perez, a grinder of sorts. But when she does get on top, she's got a really strong base. So it's hard to clear any type of space. And this starts to wear on you. You're constantly trying to shuck. You're constantly trying to, you know, create any type of space so that you can explode and get back up, or maybe not hit a sweep. It's really hard to hit a sweep and you got an ass like that on top of you. But again, point being is that she tires the longer this fight goes. And at 10,000 feet altitude, probably coming off a bad weight cut, I have no ability to trust that she'll be able to keep the fight standing. And then beyond that, fight a competitive 10 or 15 minutes need be. Perez's last fight with Carol Rosa. Rosa is a BJJ black belt. She only just needs the two takedowns. Once she gets on top, that's where she really sinks her hips down, racks up some control time, racks up a little bit of ground and pound, and then gets the job done that way. I think in her last, she's had 6 fights for the UFC, 4, 10. Yeah, she's had 23 takedowns completed in her 6 UFC fights. So that's the game plan, and I think it'll work extremely well against Macy Jason. So I agree. I think that decision, probably the most likely scenario. It's not like Perez is really finishing a whole lot of people, but watch weigh-ins, and I think you'll have a better understanding of Macy Jason and how zapped she is. If she's looking very Skeletor, she's looking very drawn out, submission probably is actually on the table. If for whatever reason, you know, she does make weight or at least doesn't look all that bad up on the scale, then maybe she's able to last the decision, which I think she will, but it's an Eileen Perez decision play for me.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, no guarantee on this, but like at this point in the week with the minus 180, minus 200s, maybe in some spots, it's like maybe wait for, like, if you want to bet Eileen, maybe wait for the weigh-ins, because that image of Macy Chason being 6 inches taller, way bigger than AFP will probably get some money, you know, heading towards Macy Chason. But like, that's just something about this matchup that like you already know, understand, and expect. So people love betting tall people, but you know what? Getting to those hips is a little bit easier when you know you can't. By any means, you cannot just hang out at range if you're Eileen Perez, because that's how you lose this fight. That's just a food for thought. Maybe you get a better price by waiting on it, but who knows? I have no idea where some of these markets are going to go sometimes in the current landscape of mixed martial arts betting. All right, moving on down. We got Christian Quiñones taking on Chris Moutinho, minus 700 for Quiñones. The comeback on Moutinho, plus 500. Who you got?
I mean, it just comes down to the you don't want to bet this money line on Christian Quiñones. He's not fought in 2 years.
Yep.
I'm not saying he's old or anything like that, but like this is his first fight in 2 full years. So the expectation that he's in great shape, or the expectation that he's going to be able to fight 15 minutes if need be, like none of that's real. You don't know for sure. He's been off because of injuries. If so, what was the injury? And, you know, you've not cut weight in 2 years. How's the weight cut going to go? And you've not fought for a minute in the last 2 years. Now you got to fight potentially for 15 minutes if need be. What I'm discovering a lot now lately is, you know, you and I, we always bring up both sides of it. And I have seen comments in the past that it's like, oh, they always, you know, give themselves an out by saying, well, this other guy could win. Well, that's the honest truth.
Yeah, it's not really out. It's more like we make picks on every single fight. I don't bet. I mean, you do the PRP, but it's like I don't bet every single fight. You know what I mean? So it's like we're making a play. Which side would we pick if we were to bet it? But because people want to pick at the end of the day, but you know, picks don't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I just find this like it's a popularity contest now, right? People have guys that they like, and this guy can't do no wrong. But they got guys that they hate, or they got guys that this guy's a bum. He's a bum. So they don't watch the tape. And I'm not saying, oh, Paul didn't watch tape on the Eileen Perez, Macy Chason. They don't watch tape.
I said
at all.
That. I don't hate myself nearly enough to watch tape on Eileen Perez. I'm sorry.
I wasn't taking a shot at all. It's just that Paul is a hardcore. Paul does the work. Nobody survives in the gambling landscape for 14 years by mailing it in, okay? But that's the new trend, is that I don't think people are watching the fights. I think it's just Tapology tells me this, this, and this, and I'm going to listen to, you know, this person said that, and they're not looking at the full argument or what could possibly go wrong. You're just clicking on stuff, and I get it. If you're clicking on something at minus 200, then Quiñones is the play for sure, but at minus 700, it's like, well, what could possibly go wrong? And what could possibly go wrong is you're betting on a guy that's not fought in 2 years. He's lost his last 2 fights. In fact, he's not won a fight in 3.5 years. What could possibly go wrong? Yeah, lots could possibly go wrong. His last 2 fights, Hyung-Hyo Kang subs him in the first round after he knocked him down. And then Rowdy Barcellos, I'll admit, he actually didn't look terrible in that fight. But in the third round, he starts to slow. Rowdy takes him down and submits him. Chris Moutinho, everyone sees the green hair and Sean O'Malley styled on him. And it's ha, 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 you're laughing at him. Now, here's another guy that's got a good chance of going 0-5 in the UFC at some point.
I think we're more laughing at the Guido. The Guido loss was pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's just fighting in a nutshell. You take 230 significant Sean O'Malley strikes, and let's be honest, that was an early stoppage, right? They're like, oh my God, I can't let this O'Malley by knockout ticket lose. Yeah. So they just waved it off. But there was only 27 seconds left in the fight, and he was in the clear, but they waved it off. To go from that to getting knocked out by a 40-year-old Guido Cannetti,
that's hilarious. But like, Wellmaker hits like an absolute ton of bricks, so it's like, I'm not killing him for that. It's kind of like a put up or shut up spot for Moutinho. Like, he loses this one, it's probably his second time getting cut, and he never gets invited back to the promotion ever again.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. It's like, I realize, well, he probably gets that my back's up against the wall and I'm in desperate need of a victory, and that doesn't mean anything. Just because you want to win doesn't mean you're going to win. But when he got cut the last time, it's like, he beat Matheus Silva, Johnny Campbell, Jay Presley. None of these are huge wins. Johnny Campbell's actually really not a bad win, but you know, he's a scrapper. He can box. He has a decent enough submission game. And when you go back to that O'Malley fight, it's like, yeah, he's defensively reckless, but he pushes a pace. When I look at Christian Quiñones, it's like, okay, Quiñones has got more than enough power to knock this guy out, but he's got one knockout win in the last 6 years. He's got two knockout wins in the last 8 years. He's knocked out two people in the last 8 years. Mind you, there's a two-year gap in there. The point being that Chris Moutinho is easy to laugh at. He's easy to fade. This guy brings nothing to the table. In Mexico City, his cardio actually will be a bit of an issue, possibly. He comes forward. He mixes it up. He can maybe take you down. If you're battling an injury, if you're battling ring rust, if you're battling any type of nerves or maybe a susceptibility to tired the longer the fight goes, just because you don't have that recent cage time, then even a jobber like Chris Moutinho could eventually pose some problems. So I wouldn't totally write that one off. What I will say is, yeah, I mean, it should be easy.
I can't bet Christian Quiñones minus 700. I really can't do it.
I really can't.
I think I'll have some money. I'm going to have some money on Chris Moutinho, and I may look like a complete moron. For the record, I had money on him against Malcolm Wellmaker and looked like a complete moron. It was like at like plus 1,200 or something ridiculous. And I mean, Wellmaker's plus 1,000 is what's listed. Like, it was like top of market, looked really, really dumb. And it was really, really dumb. But there's no way I'm betting Quiñones minus 700 here.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'll have something on Moutinho on Saturday, I'm sure. And it'll probably lose. And then people will be like, oh my God, Quiñones was free money. It's just like, yeah, well, minus 700 is hardly free money. Is what it is. That's the name of the game, bro. Moving on down, we got Javier Reyes taking on Douglas Silva de Andrade, minus 215. For the LFA standout, and Reyes, the comeback on DSDA, plus 185. Fight is at featherweight. Javier Reyes's like height on Contender Series versus Tapology has him listed as 5'10". I'm interested to see these guys both on the scales before I really do anything. One, for the reason that Douglas Silva de Andrade pulled out of his last fight due to like not being medically cleared to fight. That fight was at bantamweight. He's like going to be 41 years old in June. So like, he's always, I mean, he's super, super jacked. So like, the guy's a little mutant, don't get me wrong. But if you go onto his Instagram, there's like one picture of him from like 2 days ago with a couple people he's standing next to that don't look like fighters. That he's just like, oh, I don't know. The translation did not kind of come through all that well. It's just like, the preparation starts now. And it's just like, as of one day ago. And it's just like, what do you mean the preparation starts now? Maybe it means like the weight cut starts now and he doesn't have to cut very much weight to get to 145 pounds. Either way, I wasn't all that impressed with Javier Reyes when I watched him. We've bet a few of his fights on Contender Series and LFA over the last year. And he's a guy that I feel like could get exposed at this next level. He had a nice win in his Contender Series fight against Justice Torres, who is actually a pretty solid regional level fighter for Fury. So like, that's not a horrible look, but Justin Torres took that fight on super, super short notice. I'm tempted to back Douglas Silva de Andrade, but like, I need to see him on the scales. And I kind of want to see like stare downs between the two of these guys to really know what type of size disparity I'm dealing with here. Yeah, that's where I'm at with this fight. What about you?
Yeah, he's definitely not 5'10". He is 5'7". So I don't think there's going to be like anything huge disparity-wise. Like they're both 5'7". And yeah, you mentioned with Douglas de Andrade, the muscle hamster this guy is. He is jacked. He is chiseled from stone. But he is 41 years old. He's got a lot of muscle on him. He's not fought. Again, this is another guy that's been riding the sidelines for quite some time now. Again, he was supposed to fight Castaneda. As Paul mentioned, there was medical issues. That fight was actually at a catch weight of 140, and he had medical issues. So now he's coming up to 145. But one has to imagine, dude, you've not fought in 2 years. You're 40 years old. You're a just absolutely jacked individual. I don't think he's able to you know, keep that pace. Reyes, meanwhile, I like Reyes. He is a human tornado. This guy puts hands on you, you're going to get knocked out. Flip side to that is, though, he's got durability issues of his own. I think that's kind of one of the reasons why he never broke out any earlier. He's got losses to Alex Velasco, knocked him out, and Larian Douglas knocked him out. And even his fight with Chris McCott on LFA a couple years back, it's like, you know, is this guy a UFC level fighter? No. Is he an awesome regional level guy? Yeah. It's when he beats you, he really puts you on. And you'd have to be a hardcore regional fan to understand some of these names. Paul mentioned Justin Torres, Lance Lawrence, Caleb Moczuma, Chase Gibson, Jordan Beltran, Jose Estrada, Luis Gomez, Ricky Simone's cousin, John Simone. These are all good wins. And he finishes all of those guys. That's his saving grace here, is that this guy will put some offense on you and he'll take you out. Paul mentioned earlier in the show, who were you taking by knockout on like a cool little theory was Ryan Gander. Or was it Ryan Gander?
No, it was Santiago Luna.
Santiago Luna. That Kevin Borges doesn't show knockout losses, but he has been knocked down.
Angel Pacheco.
That was the one. Pacheco. Pacheco shows, oh, this guy's never been knocked out. So maybe the KO prop's going to be a little bit shorter on the basis of this guy's never been knocked out. Well, you watch the footage, this guy gets rocked all the time. That's how I feel with Douglas de Andrade. When you watch back some of these fights, Cody Stamann knocked him down. Sergey Morozov's a decision machine. Cody Stamann is a decision machine. They both knocked him down. Peter Yan didn't knock him out. His corner threw in the towel after the second round because he was getting absolutely lit up, which is fair. It's Peter Yan. But when I look at Javier Reyes, it's like, if you've not fought in 2 years, you're almost 41 years old, you've had some health issues, and now you're jumping in 10,000 feet above sea level, taking on a local Mexican fighter that people in the crowd will obviously be behind. It's going to end up divulging into a scrap. Reyes is getting a high KO percentage. He finishes a whole lot of guys. How do you stop this guy? You got to take him down. You got to knock him out. And therein lies the issues with Douglas Da Silva. He's not really much of a wrestler. And for a guy that's as jacked as he is, he's really not much of a knockout guy either. Therefore, I do feel like Reyes not only gets the job done, but I got Reyes inside the distance. Reyes by KO. I'm not really seeing the submission prop, to be honest with you. I'm not feeling the submission. But I think sometime in the second or the third round, it just becomes, you know, the offense becomes insurmountable, and eventually he topples him over. So give me Reyes by knockout.
Reyes by knockout. It's like plus 350 out there, kid.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be taking a stab this week.
That's spicy. All right, moving on down. I just saw odds actually drop for this fight. We got Ernesta Caracate taking on Regina Tarin. Sofia Montenegro pulled out for undisclosed reasons, at least at the time of this recording. And the line really hasn't changed. You'll see up on the board here that we're looking at. Montenegro is minus 205, plus 175. They put Regina Tarin, who's a 7-0 fighter who's fought on like Budo Cento MMA or whatever, which is like another regional Mexican promotion. The line on Bet Online right now is minus 180 Ernesta, plus 155 for Regina. Were you aware of this change? Have you investigated? Are you aware of Regina Tarrant. Like, I watched a little bit of tape on her. Here's my quick little thoughts in a nutshell. All of Ernesto's fights are, like, close and, you know, very, very, very competitive. She's long. I think she's there to get held and kind of controlled. All of her fights end up being very, very close, contentious kind of decisions. This fight looks like another fight that could be a really close, contentious decision. I probably won't have a cent on it, to be perfectly honest, especially when it's minus 180 plus 155 and the other girl's coming in on super short notice. I don't see an edge there. Dog or CF Dop, if I were to absolutely have to bet this fight, but I won't. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just very limited amount of Regina Tarrant that I was able to kind of look into, but she was supposed to have a Muay Thai fight on the exact same day. Sorry, 2 days earlier. So she was going to take a Muay Thai fight on the Thursday in Mexico, and now she's taking an MMA fight in the UFC. So, yeah, how times change. Honestly, she seems to be way more of a striker herself. She's only 21 years old. She's got that youth. She's got that ability to throw up some decent enough pace. Doesn't look like she's got cardio issues or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's tough to be making your UFC debut on less than a week's notice, being that you weren't really preparing for it and you're getting Ernesta Caracate. Is the money line wrong on Caracate being that she is in these close fights? Maybe, but you got to look at the fact that you got a girl here has win over Carly Judice, taking on a 21-year-old Muay Thai fighter who's taking the fight on a few days' notice by way of they need someone local. Her fight was against Sofia Montenegro was at 125. This fight's at 130 for no other reason than this other girl really not in that not. She was going to fight a Muay Thai fight up at 130.
Yeah, they don't I just want don't think to cut all the way down.
Yeah, but I think she is a 25er. It's just well, I'm not really in that type of shape right now. Could we just do a catchweight of 130? When I look at Caracate Ernesta. She's Lithuanian. Lithuanians do have decent striking. It's a decent little pedigree over there. They have good kickboxers. The thing is that the ground game really isn't caught up. And that's her issue. Against Dion Barbosa, she gives up the two takedowns and not able to get back up. Against Nicole Cagliari, it's a split decision because Cagliari got the three takedowns. This new opponent, Regina Tarrant, I don't think she's going to be looking to take her down. I think she's going to be looking to stand and strike. And in that regard, Caracate landed 184 significant strikes against Carly Judice. Outworked Judice for a split. And then the Cagliari fight also a split, but landed 95 significant strikes. She averages 7.3, almost 7.4 strikes landed per minute. And again, this is a girl that's only 27 years old. 5'9", long for the division, high, high output. Even though she's at Mexico City and it's at altitude, you're throwing that many strikes. You're in good shape, and I expect her to be in good shape.
She was already on this card, so she was prepping for this anyway.
And she's already on the card. Meanwhile, you have a 21-year-old girl, right, who is just like, I was going to get
paid. From Mexico City, so it's like, well, altitude's not going to be an issue for this Tarrant girl. She's literally from Mexico City.
Right, so Budo Sento was going to pay me $500 to take a Muay Thai fight, and now I'm going to get paid $12,000 U.S. To fight Ernesta Caracate in the UFC. I don't know. It seems to me like there's just enough reason to think that I would want Caracate. In terms of the striking, I feel like Caracate is a slightly better striker, more refined, 6 years older, more mature, more experienced all around, has fought in the UFC already. There's enough reasons to take her, but it's women's MMA. It's a super short notice fight, and the money line's blown up. It's not even.
No,
it's not minus 150 or Ernesto.
It just opened. Minus 180 plus 155.
Yeah, for that number, Ernesta, but I do feel like it'll probably start to balloon up a little bit anyways.
Could.
She was originally, this is just on Tapology.
Basically the same price as they had it listed for the other fight.
Like, well, no, I don't know. It's hard to say, but like, what was the opener on Ernesta versus Sofia Montenegro?
Minus 300, but then it blew up all the way up to like minus 205. So early money was coming on Montenegro, and I didn't really understand that. I think... I'm not very impressed with Montenegro. She's got that fight. Like, that was the fight that I did a bunch of tape studies. She has, like, that loss to, like, an absolute nobody where she got knocked out in, like, 10 seconds. She lost on her Contender Series fight. It was a blood and guts war. It was a good fight, but blood and guts war. Like, I actually really liked Ernesta coming in, like, when it was Sophia, I didn't really agree with the line movement that was happening there. I thought Ernesto was definitely the side that I was going to bet. And then they throw Regina in there, and I feel like Regina's actually a better opponent than Sophia, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. I'm very, very torn on this fight.
Yeah, that's fair.
As I said, probably a fight that I don't get too financially invested in this week. Depending on, we'll see where the number goes. But yeah, as it stands right at the moment of this, like on the freshly open line, we got, yeah, minus 180 Ernesto. So maybe as a value side, we'll find out, but it won't cost me very much money this week, if anything at all. Francis Marshall taking on Eric Silva. Francis Marshall, one of the bigger favorites on the card. Eric Silva, pretty long in the tooth and hasn't had success at this level. Francis Marshall feels like they're trying to get your boy back on track. Francis Marshall trains in Denver, right? So it's like altitude. I believe he trains in Denver. Maybe I'm wrong. It feels like they're trying to get him on back on track after the Myron Santos fight. Giving him probably one of the worst guys on the roster. But he's minus 725. How great can you feel about this spot? Francis Marshall is the pick because, like, Eric Silva, frankly, he's like, what, 37, 38? Durability looks like a problem. Getting subbed in round three against TJ Brown, not exactly a great look. Abner Boy Nazarov. I mean, ever since that Contender Series fight, he's just kind of just like piled the losses on at the karate combat level. Yeah, literally everywhere that guy goes, he's catching L's these days. So like that win did not age very well. Everything kind of points towards Francis Marshall getting back on track here. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Francis Marshall absolutely wrecks this guy. You could see that the pieces were already in place before that. The Myron Sanders fight, I know I've gone on record saying I believe Myron Sanders won that fight, and I stand by that. I do. But Francis Marshall looked really good in that fight. And the biggest difference is he started off the early portion of his career at Pellegrino MMA in New Jersey under UFC veteran Kurt Pellegrino, Batman. I think he kind of plateaued at some point. It's like, I need training partners. I need different looks. I need someone that's going to push me. I can't just be the big dog in the room. He's young. He's got wrestling background. He's got decent grappling. He's got decent durability. He's got decent pace. He's got all the mechanics, but he needs to somewhere that's going to take him to that next level. So prior to the Myron Sanders fight, he went to Killcliff. And again, I thought his wrestling looked a lot better. His resolve looked good. Did he take his foot off the gas in some spots? Yeah. I feel like Santos landed the more overall blows, like the total number of strikes as opposed to the significant numbers of strikes, and even at the significant number of strikes, I feel like Santos landed those as well. But this was a good learning experience for Santos. He lost a split decision to Myron. He won a split decision over Dennis Bazukia. He lost a split decision to William Gomez. He's had five fights in the UFC, and three of them have been splits. So at some point, you're going to have to figure out a way to kind of put your best foot forward and make these a little more decisive. And I do feel like he's trending in that direction. I keep hearing people saying this is sorry about that Myron Santos fight. Dude, he totally robbed you. Here, we're giving you an easy win to get you back on track. I don't believe that, dude, because after the Myron Santos fight, they booked him against Austin Bashy, but Marshall pulled out due to an injury. So if you owed him one, why would you have booked his next fight against Bashy? And then he pulls out, and now you owe him one? It doesn't really make sense to me.
Well, this is a lot easier fight than Bashy.
This is a way easier fight than Bashy. And so in that regard, him pulling out is all good. Eric Silva's actually got a nasty leg lock game. He's a decent enough grappler. If he jumps on something, he can maybe snatch it up. But most of his submissions are in the first round. You know, grab your back, grab a rear naked choke, flop on something, get the quick sub, get out of there. The longer it goes, that's where he's going to start to get turned out. Against TJ Brown, he tired the longer it went, and against Namov, he just hurts his leg 46 seconds in the first round or 44 seconds in the first round. But that's 2 years ago. So now you hurt your leg, you rehab the injury, you take 2 years off, you jump back in, you're 38 years old, and they're giving you Francis Marshall. How do you win? I gotta sub him. Okay, well, he's a much better wrestler than you. Okay, well, then you're probably going to be on your back trying to grab a leg lock, which is tough to do these days in MMA, or you're going to be forced to stand with him, in which Francis Marshall's a better striker. A little more output, a little more resolve, a little more power, a little more youth, athleticism. Kind of got all those X factors going his way. So Marshall's going to get cut if he doesn't pick up a victory here, and this is prime. And as you mentioned, Enver Boynazarov 3-0 at the time. He's 5-6 now. This Edgar Cabello, he was 19-6 at the time. He's gone 1-4 since then. Yeah. All of his wins have not aged particularly well, and they're years ago. So this is, in fact, a very difficult spot for him against Marshall, who I do think goes in, corrects things, gets back in the win column, and probably shows a good version of himself. So it's Francis Marshall for me.
And the curtain jerker, at least at the time of recording, you know, Ernesto Fight could probably get, it's possible that they move that to the curtain jerker. But as the bout order, I think, stands right now, Damian Penas takes on Wesley Schultz, minus 245 for Penas. Schultz can be had for plus 210. Who you got?
Yeah, you got Wes the Party Schultz versus Damian the Big Penas. Again, and I know we sound like a broken record here, is that the altitude really does affect this one. With Damian, we don't really know the depths of his ground game. And Wes Schultz, coming from a college wrestling background, really solid grappling, very, very hard pace in the first 5 minutes. He's going to give Damian probably lots of trouble. For Damian, he has trained at Evolucio Thai for a while. He did spend some time at the UFC PI most recently. But I do feel like his ground game is not necessarily just a complete write-off. But in the first round against Wes Schultz, he could have some serious problems. He's also only 23 years old, and his win condition in the vast majority of his fights so far have been that first-round knockout. So putting him at altitude, if he doesn't get the first-round knockout, he could be in trouble. You're also matching him up with by far the best wrestler he's fought, by far the best grappler he's fought. It all shows that it could be problematic early, but Wes Schultz, man, he's just got this thing where he absolutely tires himself out. Yeah, and once he gasses out, the wheels fall right off.
It's ugly.
It gets real ugly real fast. There's no doubt he's talented, but I think his style is just push a hell of a pace early and break your opponent. And if it doesn't happen, then you're going to start to see this guy fall off. His chin's also not necessarily great. So if you do get tired, you're not unable to get that takedown, you eat that right hand coming down the middle, and I'm going to be good for him. I feel like he's definitely a live underdog in the spot, being that he's a superior grappler, being that he's got a little more experience. But Penas looked pretty good on the Contender Series. He looks like he's got legitimate power. He's a good athlete. He's young. He's only going to be making improvements, and he's traveling around getting the best looks possible. So my heart tells me that at some point he's going to just tire out Wes Schultz, especially at altitude, and then I'm knocking him out in the second and the third round. So that's kind of the angle I'm going towards there. But people don't want to hear it. They want people to say, oh, this is the easiest pick of the week, and oh, this guy's a guaranteed lock, and oh, remortgage your house and put it on this guy. They like assertiveness, and we're just trying to be real with you. This main card, okay? Brandon Moreno's coming off a loss. Lonier Kavanaugh's coming off a loss. Marlon Vera's coming off a loss. Daniel Zellhuber's coming off a loss. Philip Buniz is coming off a loss. Kevin Borges is coming off a loss. Angel Pacheco is coming off. That's your main card. Your main card has 7 fights on it, and there's like 9 guys that are coming off losses, and these are your best guys on this card. It's inconsistent. Then we talked about the layoffs. It's like, okay, well, Eric Silva hasn't fought in 2 years. Douglas D'Andrade has not fought in 2 years. Christian Quinones hasn't fought in 2 years. Andrew Pacheco hasn't fought in 2 years. What do you want from me,
and
dog?
You take all these question marks and you put them at 10,000 feet altitude, so and you expect somebody, and you put big freaking minus 700s next to their name, and you expect one of these guys to not have a bad night, not screw it up, not do something stupid. Like, that's just gambling. So it's like, off the top of the show, I did say that, like, be careful. You know, there are no quote unquote locks, I don't think, when you get up to up to 10,000 feet altitude when you're dealing with this level of opponent. That, to get back to Schultz versus Penas, I took a small shot on Wes Schultz at plus 215. And it has 100% to do with the grappling and the fact that, like, Penas, if you go back and watch his Johnny Gregory fight, it ends up being a round one finish for him. And they were like, oh, for a white belt, he's doing so well in this fight. He's 23 years old. I think if they fought in like 3 or 4 years, I don't even think this is competitive. I think the real prospect here is Penas, and he may absolutely flatline Wesley Schultz. But like early in that round one, in the first 7.5 minutes of this fight, if Schultz can turn this into a grappling match, get it to the mat control. I think he may just have a little bit too much veteran savvy at this point. So I took a small shot on him, but you know, if that fails, there's 12 more fights for me to, you know, either get my money back or lose more. But I think Penis has a much bigger ceiling. It may be a little bit too much for him too soon, from what I've seen in terms of his grappling ability. No doubt he's 23 years old. He's going to be making massive improvements. Great athlete, explosive. If you saw them both standing next to each other at a bar, I know who I would be picking, but it doesn't always really work out that way. Wes Schultz, it's like, if he doesn't get those takedowns, like, he is so awkward on the feet. Like, it ain't going to be pretty. He needs the takedowns. He needs the takedown early to really have any sort of shot in this fight. So, I've got money on Wes Schultz. And, there's by no means plus 210 guy who I admittedly think is a horrible-looking, awkward striker. I always put caveats in there because, like, that's the reason why it's not like I'm throwing a huge sum of money on Wes Schultz. It's like, I see the risks. I see the problems. I'm trying to just relay the risks and problems to you. So, yeah, we say all these types of things. But, it sounds like it's about time for you to hit a 13-leg parlay, Cody.
Yeah, you know what?
Hit him with the PRP.
Layoffs? Who cares about the inconsistencies? Who cares about the 10,000 feet?
People just want the PRP, bro.
Just hit 13-5 parlay, which is my plan. And then all the bad times turn into happy times.
100%.
Brandon Moreno, but I would hedge if I had a 12 people did their job, and this is the last fight in my ticket. Damn right, I'm hedging out. But for now, I'll take Brandon Moreno. I'm going to go with David Martinez, Daniel Zellhuber, Edgar Chavez, who I do like, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Santiago Luna, Ryan Gandra, Eileen Perez, Christian Quinones, Javier Reyes, Ernesto Caracat, Francis Marshall, and you know what? I'll be honest with you. I haven't got a single underdog in this card at this point. I'm taking Wes Schultz too. But where I'm going to try to get that plus money is on certain props. And I know we talked about, say, a Javier Reyes by knockout is plus 345. Well, I would rather chase that than some random underdog who I'm not fully certain on. So props, totals, two legs of something that makes sense for you to get plus money. That's where I'll be trying to focus on this weekend. But of course, the best plus money you're going to get is just hitting them all right. So let's go ahead and do that. It's not like you're ever... That's always the goal. The goal is always to win. But yeah, sometimes you have to be realistic that you'll see some cappers out there. They make their name on being bold and this guy's going to absolutely smoke him. And here's a 10-unit play. And people are drawn into that. Naturally, bugs are drawn into bright lights. But it's not who I am to try to tell someone, yeah, don't worry about this. This is the easiest fight ever. If you do the tape and you're watching inconsistent people, you'll see flaws in them. This is a card full of people with flaws
and questions,
hard not to pick up on them. Yeah, exactly. So of course we're hoping for the best, and really the best way to attack this thing is to live bet. But Paramount's like a minute behind real time, so you got to be a Pogi Rob type who is going to get access to the best feed that's going to give you the most closest to being up to date, and then that way you can make some proper moves, because a lot of these fights ain't going the distance. So by the time you're watching it on TV and you decide, oh, I think I want this guy, it's done. It's over. You're never going to find the number. They're going to lock the market. They're going to reopen it. And all of a sudden, that bet's not good anymore. So I don't know, man. This is a stinky card for betting purposes. But of course, I'm excited to get to it because it's UFC and I love it. But there's good boxing on this weekend. There's other MMA cards involved. I think just maybe sometimes less is more. Don't get overexposed to a card 10,000 feet up in the air with this level of uncertainty.
Should be fun. Should be a fun night of fights. There's also, I'm over on the Bookie Beatdown Discord. There's some UFC Africa's Thursday morning. There'll be some ONE Championship. There's an LFA card. Not in love with the regional scene this week, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, the show goes on. There's just tons of MMA every single week. Anyway. that is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Cody, I'm Paul, saying goodbye. Good luck.